So we're going to be looking at kind of the first half of Hosea. So fortunately, we're not going to have to cover 14 chapters in one lesson. Last week was kind of my sprint limit. Although even covering Hosea in 2 weeks can be a lot, but I think it gives us time to give some intro and to kind of sink in to the early parts of this book, and then we can move a little bit faster through some of the message at the end of this week or next week. So if you spent time this week and you read through Hosea and, you know, you're familiar with it and it's something you've read before, right? It's kind of like Hosea is kind of that weird book a little bit that sticks out in our mind. If you ask someone, what's Hosea about? And you're going, is Hosea the one that married the prostitute? It's like, yeah, that's Hosea. Right? And so we know that about Hosea, and that's what sticks out in our mind, and it's very memorable, right? I mean, it comes right at you from the start, and honestly, there's a part of us, as we look into it, that we're kind of appalled, right? I mean, we wonder when we read this, like, why would God ask Hosea to do that, right? I mean, asking Jonah to go into a foreign land to preach, you say, understood. Right? Asking Moses to go to Pharaoh, and Moses is like, I'm not the guy. And he says, you are the guy, you know, but I'm going to give you some help, right? And we say, okay, I got that. Even when we look at the apostles and other people that put themselves in harm's way to preach and to teach and to save, right? That's something I think that we can identify a little bit more. But then when God asks Hosea, go take a woman that works as a prostitute and marry her. We struggle to identify with that at a minimum, right? That's not something that we can understand being asked of us, and so it's hard for us to relate to and understand and process. And then, you know, as the tale goes along further and we see the children that come and the children that in all likelihood are clearly not Hosea's children, again, we're unsure, and yet Hosea loves Gomer. And he continues to love Gomer. And so we see this great kind of allegory to God's love for us. And so there's a lot of purpose in what Hosea did and in his life and in his teaching. And I hope that Hosea could appreciate that on his own at the time, right? That's a little easy for us to look in hindsight and read and go, wow, what a great message, right? We kind of look at it like a parable almost. But it wasn't a parable. Hosea was a real person, and Gomer was a real person, right? And their child named Not My People was a real person. And so it's tough, right? Last week, we looked at Amos, and we talked about, I mentioned at least, that a lot of scholars and a lot of the people I read compared Amos to John the Baptist. But when we look at Hosea, the comparisons align a lot more up to Jesus. And that makes sense, right? Because Hosea is kind of representing God in this book, in his marriage and in his wife's unfaithfulness as God's people. And so we'll kind of be looking at that and try to think about that and let it sink in, because I think when we can get past the part of this message that is really just kind of viscerally kind of like, this is horrible, right? When we can get past that, we can see, right? If we can kind of get out of that perspective and we can look that God's people being unfaithful to him is what's horrible. And if we are unfaithful to God, that's what's horrible. And when we can see what God wanted us to see through this, I think it becomes a really beautiful thing. And I think me studying it a lot has helped me to appreciate this book in a way I know that I didn't as much in the past. All right, so with Hosea, we get a lot of insight into the timeline, and we'll look at that a little bit in a minute. But we can see, right, we're kind of creeping down into that Assyrian period, and yet you can tell from the message reading this week, the Assyrians have not taken Israel captive yet, but it's close. And we'll look a little bit at the timeline, but during the time of this message, right, especially once we get into kind of like chapter 4 through the end of the book, Hosea is letting them know judgment's coming, okay? And we're going to get into that, and he's even more specific than some of the previous prophets were. Some of this assumption when we look at Hosea, right, we're not told where he's from. We're not given a whole lot about him other than his father's name was Beeri, right? So we don't know what tribe he was from. We don't know any of that. But the assumption is that he's from Israel. And it's based on his familiarity with the people. It's based on his comfort, you know, in marrying someone of the Israelites and living there, right? Not that he was comfortable necessarily in choosing that woman as his wife, but he was comfortable in that environment. He was very sympathetic to the people in his messages. And so I think we can assume safely that he was an Israelite of Israel, unlike Amos, who would have come up from Judah, right? And Amos, we kind of saw that harder message, right? He was preaching to these rich, unfaithful people when he would have been a faithful Jew from a poor part of town, okay? And so we see that a little bit, and we see that from his message. As it's in here, right, we're going to be entering quickly into the period where the Assyrians are coming through. All right, so the timeline of Hosea, right there in chapter 1, verse 1. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Okay, so you can look back here, and you can see why it's a little easier for us to kind of establish this timeline, right? We can look right up there at the kings of Judah, and we can see that he was prophesying from the time of Uzziah to the time of Hezekiah. All right, now, how many years did he prophesy during the time of Uzziah? How many years during the time of Hezekiah? Well, we're not really sure there, right? And so based on this, we can safely assume that Hosea was a prophet for 30 to 45 years. Okay, so this was a long ministry, right? And that kind of makes sense, right? First thing we see him do is take a wife. And then as we follow his life, he has children, right? And then he rescues this wife, and then he continues to preach this message, right? And so that wasn't something that happened overnight. It wasn't the call to Jonah to say, hey, get up, leave, go to this people and preach. No, this was a lifetime commitment for him. When we think of that first message, right, the first thing he said to him is, take yourself a wife. That tells us a little bit about Hosea too, right? He was unmarried, okay? As a faithful to God man of Israel, unmarried, he was young, probably in the neighborhood of 14 to 19 years old, okay? I did a little bit of research, and I think, you know, women typically were 13, 14, maybe 15 years old. They were married by that age. The men, 15, 16, 19, would have been kind of old to be unmarried. So we're looking at a young man at the beginning of this book when the Lord called him. There's possibly some overlap in the timeline with Amos, where Amos would have been older and near the end of his ministry when Hosea was starting and when the word of the Lord came to him. But when we see this too, we can see clearly that the message of Hosea was delivered prior to Assyria being conquered. We know that Hosea was prophetic during the time of Hezekiah, but this doesn't really tell us his fate when the Assyrians came. If we look over in 2 Kings, this will give us a little insight into the timeline. 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 9 through 12. In the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, the son of Elah, king of Israel, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it, and at the end of 3 years he took it. In the sixth year of Hezekiah, which was the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Samaria was taken. The king of Assyria carried the Israelites away to Assyria and put them in Halah, and on the harbor of the river Gozan in the cities of the Medes, because they did not obey the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed his covenant, even all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, they neither listened nor obeyed. Okay, so like I said, we know that Hosea was there sometime into the reign of Hezekiah. 6 years into the reign of Hezekiah would have been when the Assyrians attacked, destroyed, conquered, and took the Israelites into captivity. We don't really know where Hosea was during that timeline. Was he killed? Was he already an old man and had passed away? Or was he taken off? We don't know that. But that just gives us some insight into, right? We've been kind of this lead up, right? The lead up is kind of ending here, right? The end of Hosea's life is when Israel was conquered. All right, so the call of Hosea. If we look in Hosea chapter 1, verses 2 and 3, when the Lord first spoke through Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go, take yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom, for the land commits great whoredom by forsaking the Lord." So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. This is a godly man. What would cause a man of God to take a wife who is a prostitute? It took the Lord telling him to do it, and he did, right? And so, like I said, when we were looking at Jonah, so many of the other prophets, you just wonder and go, were they not like, "Lord, why don't you just send me over to Assyria, send me to a city, I'll preach to my most hated enemy. Don't make me do this," right? What Jonah was asked to do in his life was so much easier by comparison. This was a hard thing, and yet we don't see any hesitation. We're not given any insight, really, into Hosea ever balking at the commandment of the Lord, right? He went and married Gomer, and this is the only child that's mentioned when it says, so he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Okay, when we look at the other children, it just says she conceived and had a child. There's a little distinction there that probably the others weren't his. And maybe the first child, Jezreel, was. Okay, so it's a tough thing, right? It took the Lord commanding him to do this thing for him to do it. And yet he went and took Gomer, and by everything that we can see and read, he loved Gomer, and he was faithful to her, and we don't see anything that would give us any indication that he was anything but a good husband. And this kind of happened after this pattern, right, that God's people have fallen into, right? So we see from this reading, and we'll continue on in verse 4 and 5, "And the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, and in just a little while I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house. And on that day, I will break," verse 6, "and she conceived again and bore a daughter. And the Lord said to him, call her name No Mercy, for I will have no mercy on the house of Israel." And moving on, "And when she weaned No Mercy, she conceived and bore a son. And the Lord said, call his name Not My People, for you are not my people, and I am not your God." Okay, so we get kind of a little bit more on the nose there with the final child, right? I mean, that call him not my people. Hosea is kind of representing God in this analogy. And so the kind of very obvious implication there is that this isn't his son. And Hosea would have been the one prophesying that message. This is tough, right? This is the hard part to get past, right? It kind of just leaves us going, why did Hosea have to go through this? Why did he kind of suffer in this way? Why did Gomer fall back into sin, right? It seems like, right, and you could think that he told him, go take this woman and marry her and love her. And you could imagine that Hosea hoped that she would stop being a prostitute at that point, right? That she would be faithful to him. And you know, but it didn't work out that way. He didn't fall in love with this woman and restore her to God in a way that she was faithful. He married a prostitute, and she didn't repent. She stayed a prostitute, even though she would have had a good and godly husband. We look at these first three children. Jezreel, whose name is assigned to the house of Jehu. Jezreel can also mean to sow, right? Was the first child, and that was kind of a warning to the line of Jehu, to the king, Jeroboam II, your line's coming to an end, and it did pretty shortly. The next child is No Mercy, as this sign that God is not going to have mercy on them, but he does show mercy to Judah, and that's mentioned. And we know that, right, when the Assyrians came through and they conquered Israel, they went to Judah next, right? And they were balking at Judah and balking at God, and saying all those things, and then what happened? Angel of the Lord came and killed 185,000 Assyrians in a single night, and the Assyrians went home, right? That ended that threat after Israel, and that's kind of mentioned here. And then this last child, not my people, right, is kind of this ironic name. But Hosea didn't just preach this message, he lived it. He felt the pain, and this would have been someone preaching this message, naming his children this, and you could just imagine what the people around him thought. You know, I mean, it would have been similar to Mary. It would have been similar to Jesus. It would have been similar to other things. We look at Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of God. So when we look at this servant that loved his wife, that loved his children, that was preaching to a people, trying to get them to turn back to God, we see someone that did it out of love, and he suffered for it. Right? He felt the shame and he felt all that. And so the connections, the comparisons that people would have to Jesus, even though different, we can see that, right? We look at the cross and we think about that every Sunday. And it's tragic and it's sad, but we take a lot of confidence in that, right? We don't always ask ourselves in a real way, why did God make Jesus suffer that way? Why did he do it, right? We know he did it because he loved me so much, right? He did it for me. We have a little bit of a harder time of God asking that of kind of a normal man, because I think when we look at the stories in the Bible, when we look at Hosea, I don't know that I can think of too many other people that had to kind of suffer in a similar way for such a long extended period of time. This wasn't like one final death blow that was painful. This wasn't kind of a series of like quick but painful things. This was a life. This was the life that he was called to live. And it's tough. I'm doing a lot of preaching and teaching here a little bit, but what do y'all think about that? Any thoughts on Hosea, why he did it, what we can learn from that?
Some discourse, you know, why, what are we doing here, God? And same here, you know, you would think there's going to be some dialogue of questioning, why are we, but there's not. There's simply obedience to what you've been called to do. And there's other examples of that we can see in God's word, but it humbles us when we're reluctant to use the word hesitation. Sometimes we hesitate to do the tough things that God calls us to do. And here's an example of someone who we don't see that.
Yeah.
We see him simply obeying and doing what God's called him to do.
Absolutely.
These examples of obedience when it doesn't make sense. Like, I mean, you really can't make it make sense from a human standpoint other than God said, do it. To Abraham or to Hosea. And they did it even though it did not make sense, and they just obeyed. They just trusted and obeyed, which is what we're called to do, trust and obey.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't make sense, right? It's that lack of hesitation. We don't read anywhere where God really explained to him beforehand, hey, I want you to go and marry a prostitute, and let me tell you why I want you to do that. You know, it just says, the word of the Lord came and said, go, take this woman as your wife and have children. And he went and did. Later, he got it. He still had to live it, but he understood because of the message that he preached. But that probably was years later. Right, at that point, he had three children by this woman who was unfaithful to him.
One other thing that stands out there, that, you know, while he doesn't give an explanation, he does say, for the land, what was the statement? He says, for the land commits flagrant harlotry, forsaking the Lord. I like the use of that, you know, the land. So there, God's not sparing anyone. He's saying it's all, everyone's guilty of this. Mm-hmm. There's not one who's not guilty of what's going on here. And he calls...
And we don't see a lot of that in the book of Hosea. We don't see a lot of this mention of other faithful people. I mean, the judgment on Israel is very complete. Do I see a hand in the back? Tyler.
This is just a kind of a demonstration of God's communication style, which is he uses humans to convey himself to humans. And so in both examples that Jimmy mentioned, it in some ways it's almost like God knew that it was going to take something like this that causes us, or take the moment where you see Abraham, a father, having to actually watch or be an instrument in his son dying. You know, it's those moments where all of a sudden that's how we come to understand God, because we all know that God had to actually watch his son die on the cross. He didn't make Abraham do that.
Yeah.
In this case, it takes that part of us that has that, like you said, a visceral reaction. And I think God is inviting us to go to that place and then say, yeah, that's what I feel. That's how you make me feel.
All right. Moving on to chapter 2, we see, you know, a little bit of a shift, but we see another painful message, and we'll kind of take a selection of some verses that we'll go through as we read. Verses 2 through 5, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. And she put away her whoring from her face and her adultery from between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and make her as in the day she was born, and make her like a wild wilderness, and make her like a parched land, and kill her with thirst. Upon her children also I will have no mercy, because they are children of whoredom, for their mother has played the whore. She who conceived them has acted shamefully, for she said, I will go after my lovers, who gave me my bread, and my water, and my wool, and my flax, and my oil, and my drink. Okay, this isn't Hosea talking about his family. This is kind of a poetry about God talking about Israel. So Israel is the unfaithful wife, and God is the husband here. And obviously Hosea preaching this message, there was a very real metaphor to the preacher. I mean, that he was preaching this message to Israel about their unfaithfulness to God, but it wasn't lost on anyone who he was married to, what she did for a living, and the status of his children. Okay, that wasn't lost. And so I think as God was pained by this message, he was pained that his people were unfaithful to him, and that it was coming to the point that Assyria is going to kill them and carry them away. That wasn't something God wanted to do. That wasn't something that would have brought him any joy. It was something that was obviously bringing him a great deal of pain. I think we would have seen that pain in Hosea preaching this message from a real standpoint with his own life. And also because Hosea loved his people too. In verses 7 and 8, she shall pursue her lovers, but not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then she shall say, I will go and return to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now. And she did not know that it was I who gave her the grain and the wine and the oil, and who lavished on her all the silver and gold which they used for Baal. And in verse 13, and I will punish her for the feast days of the Baals, when she burned offerings to them and adorned herself with her ring and jewelry and went after her lovers and forgot me, declares the Lord. So we see a few things here, right? It's this, at some point, the people of Israel will realize, you know what? Serving the Baals, it actually is not as good as it once was. I'm going to go back to God. I'm going to go back to my first husband that was providing all these things for me, and you know that actually do. And he's saying, you didn't know. It was actually all those gifts that your lovers, your gifts that these Baals were supposedly giving you, they were all for me to begin with, right? And then you took what I gave you and gave it to Baal. And so in the end, he's saying, I'm going to punish you for these things. And we'll see that later, that God will say later in Hosea, I'm not going to forget what you've done and why you've done it until you truly repent. And so we kind of see this message of everything circling back. And yet, at the end of the chapter, we see this hope. In verse 14, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her back into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. Right? So this is God as the husband in this relationship, winning his wife back. In verse 16, and in that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me my Baal. In verse 22 and 23, and then the earth shall answer with grain and wine and oil, and they shall answer Jezreel, which means to sow, and I will sow her for myself in the land, and I will have mercy on no mercy, and I will say to not my people, you are my people, and he shall say, you are my God. Right? So there's kind of this beautiful imagery here that there's this unfaithful people, and yet God, his love never stops. His faithfulness to his unfaithful wife in Israel is never diminished in that relationship, right? And then the names of the three children, right, are referenced, right? He will say to Jezreel and bring them back, to not my people, you are my people. To no mercy, I will show you mercy. This is Hosea preaching this message, very aware that his wife has evidently left him at this point, or he'd put her away, or she had run off to be a prostitute, or we don't really know the circumstances in which that relationship had broken up, but she was gone, and he had these three children. David?
Yeah, the therefore in verse 14 makes no sense. Now, usually therefore is like, because of this, this will happen. Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the relationship. And when we'll move on to chapter 3, that's where when we might compare Hosea to Jesus, right? Someone that he gave of himself for someone that was so undeserving, which is us, right? But he did for Gomer. Okay, so here we see Hosea's love for Gomer. Okay, Hosea chapter 3, and the Lord said to me, go again, love a woman who is loved by another man and is an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the children of Israel. Though they turn on other gods and love cakes of raisins, so I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a lethech of barley. And I said to her, you must dwell as mine for many days. You shall not play the whore or belong to another man. So will I also be to you. For the children of Israel shall dwell many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or pillar, without ephod or household gods. Afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king, and they shall come in fear to the Lord and to his goodness in the latter days. So God commands Hosea to go back and take the same woman, to take Gomer back again from prostitution and bring her back, right? And he says, this time you're going to be faithful to me and you're going to dwell with me for many days. And I hope and kind of choose to believe that that meant the rest of her life, that she was faithful to him. But what a hard thing, right? You think like, wow, the first ask from God, or the command, not really an ask, but a command that he chose to obey, was go take a wife out of whoredom and marry her and have children. And now, all these years later, and we don't know how many years, but we can look around in our world and you can just imagine in the world, you know, 2,500 or more years ago, the life of a prostitute is not an easy life, right? She was used up and worn out. She was probably a beautiful young woman. That beauty had faded and nobody wanted her anymore. And the analogy to us, when we've chosen to sin, when we have turned and committed adultery before God, and him wanting us, shouldn't be lost on us here, because it's a very powerful message. And it's interesting if we look in Exodus chapter 21. If we look in Exodus chapter 21, I got it typed out, in verse 32, if the ox gores a slave, male or female, the owner shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver. Right? So when we look at that amount that he paid for her, you know, there, we can't say for sure where that amount came from, but likely he gave all the silver he had and enough barley to equal another 15 pieces of silver. And so he paid the price of a slave. Absolutely. I mean, just, yeah, that's a great, great point that we, when we become Christians, we're like Gomer, right? We're not this young, perfect, unstained soul coming to God. We're coming to God broken. And he redeems us, and then we fail again, just like Gomer did. And when we look, you know, I choose to kind of believe that Gomer was, as an example, right? She was an example of God redeeming a prostitute, his people that were adulterous, and then them choosing to be unfaithful again, and then him saying, even though you've been unfaithful, right, that weird therefore, I'm still going to bring you back because I love you. And so I think the fact that her life is such an analogy to that is why when we look at Hosea chapter 2, verse 16 and 17, when it says, in that day declares the Lord, you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me my Baal, for I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, and they shall be remembered by my name no more. Right? I choose to think that the analogy continues on. And so this, therefore, right, this final redemption, right? Because right after that, when God says, I'm going to bring you back. And in that day, when I bring you back, you're not going to remember the Baals anymore. You're going to love me. That analogy continued to Gomer even at that point, right? That when she was redeemed that final time, she would have realized, this man loves me. And he did bring me back, right? And this was the better choice all along. And it was a tough lesson to learn. We don't know that, right? We're not really told a lot about the happy ending that Hosea and Gomer may or may not have had, but it tracks with how God had used them, and I think maybe hoping that they could end their life with a little bit of happiness can add kind of a sweet note to that story, and even thinking that we'll see Gomer in heaven one day, even though she's not a name that we think of with a lot of fondness. I've never met someone who named their daughter Gomer. Right, and I probably never will. Any thoughts on that?
Again, from a worldly standpoint, the world would tell Hosea, you're crazy for giving her another chance. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you continue to give her a chance? I mean, that's the analogy, too. We don't deserve our second or whatever, how many chances with God, and yet that's the measure of his love for us. He still is reaching out and forgiving. And that's just we don't deserve it.
Yeah.
It's a
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. And what is the thing about, what is mercy except something that we don't deserve, right? Mercy is something that if you chose not to give it, someone would say, well, they didn't deserve it anyways, right? They deserved what they got. And mercy is that thing when we say, well, I'm gonna give you this thing anyways, even undeserved. David, then Mark.
Not even neutral. It's, you know, in my version, it says, I will allure her and speak tenderly to her. There's just an overflowing love there that's undeserved. But that's God's perspective on his people.
Yeah. It's a hard story for us to hear. It's hard to understand that we're all Gomer in this relationship. When we kind of read it and want to like really empathize with Hosea, you're like, that's horrible for him. How could God ask that of him when he gave his son, right? I mean, the price that Hosea paid was so much less than the price God paid for us. And it's still, there's something about Hosea being a man just like you and me, that there's a part of us, I think, that still, you know, that part of us that says, yes, Jesus was a man in every way, but he was also God in every way too. And so there's just that piece of us that can go, he could do it and I couldn't, right? He's God, I'm not. Hosea is just like me. And so God asking that of him, it's a little bit of a struggle for us to make that leap. And I think that's okay. But seeing it and understanding the lesson we can learn from it, there is a beautiful love story here of how much God loves us. And I think me going through it, it can be kind of emotional. It can be for me in thinking about it, but it's a good study. We'll kind of finish the chapter. I know we only covered 3, but 4 through most of the end next week will be a lot of the indictments. That's the judgment. So it's going to be more of Hosea's preaching to the people and kind of less of the story. And then there's some hope at the end. Thank you for your time.